Hi, this is Bob Cooper of Illy, and I'd like to say thanks for listening to this program, and thanks so much for your trust in us. Now, I know that you're anxious to get started, I'm sure of that, but before we do, let me take a moment, if I could, to tell you about what's in store for you. First of all, what you're going to hear are two of the most amazing marketeers on this entire planet, Mike Sullivan and Michael Tuggle. They both work with a Loomis agency in Dallas, Texas, and there's no doubt in my mind these two guys are not only gifted at what they do, but they have a profound understanding of our industry. You see, in addition to having clients like Pier 1 and Pepsi, they've also done work with Ford, with Goodyear, with a number of the auto part companies, and with new car dealerships as well. What you're about to hear are the 12 most important things that you'll need to do in order to put together a really great advertising campaign. You're going to learn about budgets, you're going to learn about your brand, you're going to learn about what you need to do to differentiate yourself from your competitors, and that list just goes on and on and on. So whether you have an independent repair shop or a dealership, if you want to put together a marketing program that's going to put you and keep you well ahead of your competitors, then what you're about to hear is going to be perfect for you. So if you're not driving, then do this, would you please? Put this audio on pause and get out a pad and a pen, because what you're going to hear are two of the most gifted marketeers on this entire planet. You're going to hear Mike Sullivan and Michael Tuggle of the Loomis Agency in Dallas, Texas.
Hi, this is Mike Sullivan, president of the Loomis Agency in Dallas, Texas, with my friend Michael Tuggle, who's an executive creative director with the agency as well.
Glad to be here again.
Glad to have you here. And Michael and I have got, between the two of us, more than 40 years in advertising and marketing, and neither of us is that old. I've got about 20 years myself, and Michael does too. Michael's a creative director by background, so he's the guy who writes and creates advertising. I've got a strategy background, so I'm the guy who comes up with the strategy and the marketing communications planning, just by way of introduction. Today, we're going to talk about the fundamentals of great marketing. So we're going to take our listeners, Michael, through a trip through the book, if you will, without actually reading a textbook. We're going to go through the fundamentals of creating great marketing campaigns that really resonate on a local level.
Yeah, and after that time, we've kind of boiled it down to kind of the key 12 things you need to look at.
Yep, absolutely.
And so today we're going to go through each one of those and give you some solid examples about, you know, how you can take those principles and apply them to your shop there in your local community.
That's right. So that's a good thing to keep in mind, 12 distinct, discrete principles for creating great, strong marketing. But before we get into that, Michael, I thought it'd be a good idea to set some expectations. Everybody coming into marketing and advertising, it seems, has really great expectations. And great expectations with respect to the things that marketing and advertising can do, and not always focused on what it can't do. It cannot sell a bad product or service. And so we're going to assume that all of our listeners, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later on, really understand that their services, that the services they offer to their customers have to be top-notch. Because first and foremost, you cannot sell something that people simply don't believe is top quality.
Yeah, that's kind of a myth about advertising, is you make people buy things that they really don't want. And that's
right.
Really not true. You really can't. You can't sell a bad product. People are too smart for that.
That's exactly right. And the other thing is that you can only sell an experience or a service one time through advertising. So once you get somebody into your store, into your shop, after that, your brand becomes your shop and that experience. It's not about advertising anymore. If they've had a good experience, advertising can do nothing more than remind them that you're there.
Yeah, it's funny. Some clients look for advertising and marketing to kind of work miracles, and it's really not what it's about. It's really about leveraging the strengths that the clients
that are
bring
already
to the table
there, and getting credit for the hard work that you're already doing. That's
absolutely
a really good point. The other thing that I'd say to our listeners is that advertising is really an investment over time. It's not something that you do, you sort of go back and forth on, get in a little bit here and pull out and get in a little bit here. It really doesn't work that way. If you're running a good fundamental marketing program, You're investing over time and you're accumulating value.
Yeah, and I think that the key to that is looking at the word investment versus expense. A lot of people look at advertising as an expense. It really is an investment. Like every aspect of your store, if you're running a great store, you're investing in it,
right?
Whether your time or your money,
that's
or
right,
your energy. It's not an expense. It's not just, right, something you tick off every month. It's an investment. It's something you're putting back into the business that, that will pay dividends down,
that's
the road,
right,
if you do it the right way.
Yep, definitely. Accumulative in that respect. So you're building up a brand over time. Otherwise, people forget who you are. Okay, so let's kind of move on a little bit. You know, there are over 170,000 auto repair shops in the United States. And the truth is, very little differentiates one from another in the minds of most customers. I mean, I know that our listeners think about their shops all the time, but their customers, even their best customers, don't. And that's something that's sometimes very hard for us to really internalize and recognize, that something that our life is all about and we're all over, it really means very little to somebody else. So we have to make it mean something. And that's what advertising is all about, getting people when they're in the market for our products or services and focusing their attention on us. You know, the big guys like Midas and Monroe, for example, they've got the advantage of national marketing and national ad campaigns to build customer awareness and preference, way, way disproportionate to what the independent local guy can do.
A lot of money.
Yeah, they do have a lot of money. They spend millions, hundreds of millions sometimes of dollars generating that national image. And they often have purchasing and distribution advantages that even make them less expensive than the independents.
And so, sometimes faster.
Yeah, that's right, and sometimes faster. So this is a little of the tough news here. So we aren't ever going to suggest for an independent that they try to compete on price. That's really not what this is all about. What they need to do is compete on service, get great credit for that service. And we're going to talk a great deal about that as we work through the 12 fundamentals here in creating a great
marketing.
Sure,
if you think
campaign.
About it, no matter really how big you are, you control your experience. You control what,
right,
that customer experience is like. And what it's like when someone walks into your store or walks out of your store.
Well, let's talk about that experience for a minute, too. So one of the few things, unfortunately, and this is a challenge in this particular category, one of the few things that most people can agree on when it comes to auto repair shops as a category is that they have to watch out, right? That, you know, they yeah, can't always trust them.
And highly skeptical.
That's really right. That's very true. It's a grudge purchase is what we call it. And that's sometimes difficult for owners of shops who are very proud of their shops, and rightfully so, to get their heads around. But study after study illustrates the public's general mistrust of auto repair shops.
Yeah, it's kind of like going to the dentist. I mean, nobody looks,
right,
forward to going to the dentist, even though it's something you need and have to do sometimes,
right,
and frankly is usually kind of expensive,
right,
but it's something that you still need to do.
Exactly. So, and this may not be as physically painful, though, but, you know, so it's important to make sure that our perspective is informed from the customer's point of view. That's really, really important. So as a category, you know, auto repair shops have an extra special marketing challenge. Okay, we get that. We need to include that in our marketing strategy. You know, even if people had complete trust in auto repair shops, they would still loathe spending their hard-earned money to repair their automobiles. And again, sometimes that's hard for gearheads like myself, who love spending money on my dirt bike. For example, I ride and race motocross.
Right.
I love spending money on my dirt bike, but I know that, you know, for the average person, somebody like you, you know, dropping a grand on something like that would just be extraordinarily painful.
It kills you because it's never,
yeah,
there's never a good time.
Yeah.
You never have $1,000
right,
laying around that you would love to go spend on,
right,
your car when you,
right,
could do something fun or,
right,
entertaining.
Yeah, if it's
or,
not your idea,
you know,
of fun, if it's not your hobby, it's painful. And if it is your idea of fun or if it is your hobby, you're probably doing it yourself anyway. So,
right,
instead of satisfying what we call the customer's acquisition instinct, and there's a big, you know, $50 word, the acquisition instinct, the instinct to go and get things to feel good. You know, instead of satisfying that instinct and getting something that they want, they wind up shelling out, on average, between $275 and $400 for something that they'd rather not spend money on at all. And so this is important for us to understand when we think about the kind of experience we're crafting. We are already starting with one foot in a bit of a hole.
Sure. And I think that's why providing a superior service to your clients is the critical foundation for marketing success.
Yep.
It's why you absolutely have to focus on that experience. You know, really the only effective way for an independent auto repair shop to differentiate itself and survive over the long haul is to offer the kind of superior customer service that, frankly, leads to true customer satisfaction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
something
they've got to keep those customers in mind.
Yep. Yep.
If the service or, you know, the experience you provide isn't perceptibly better than your competitors, you really can't effectively differentiate your shop at all.
Yep.
Your product is your service, and it has to be superior. And we said it, in the mind of the consumer, even though you know how you're different and why you're different, in the mind of a consumer, it's so kind of a low impact, kind of low thought kind of process. They're not constantly thinking about it. Really, when it comes time, everybody just seems kind of the same.
You know, here's a good point. I mean, to jump on that point, you know, Krispy Kreme, one of our favorite donuts, they sell a better donut. Starbucks sells a better cup of coffee in the minds of a lot of people.
Right.
Nike sells a better shoe. And if they didn't, you know, their advertising and marketing would not be effective.
That's
just
right.
wouldn't. It'd
That's
sell
right.
at one time, and then people would be talking about what an awful donut, what a poor cup of coffee.
What a disappointment.
What a disappointment the shoe was.
Yeah, what an oversell.
Right. So you have to start with a great product. And only then can we talk about creating effective marketing. It's foundational.
It absolutely is. You know, the superior rating is reserved for those shops who perform in the top 10, you know, 15% across the board.
Right.
But average really doesn't cut it. And and the problem is that by definition, most auto repair shops kind of fall below average.
They do.
Whereas an average local fast food restaurant, laundry service, video rental store, even a grocery store will still meet customer expectations and just kind of get by.
Right.
An average auto repair shop really doesn't cut it for most consumers.
Right.
You know, think about it. This is a marketing problem, really, because it's a product problem.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, I can go to the grocery store and, number one, the cost of what I'm buying is kind of low.
Right.
And if it's just kind of okay, fine, I'm on to the next meal in 3 hours.
Yep.
When you're talking about your car, it's traditionally kind of expensive, and there are safety issues involved
as well. Yeah,
there's
safety issues, there's convenience issues, if it's not fixed the right time, if there's a bring-back issue, these are they pollute your experience. And
we'll
talk a little bit about you know, when they have experiences like that, how to handle that. But we won't get into a lot of service stuff here. This is really about creating advertising. So what about this question? It's a sort of a foundational question. So what if your shop was legendary for its service, not just good at service? What would that look like?
For sure. You know? Talk about what that looks like a little bit.
Yeah. Well, so what if your customers told stories about driving 25 miles or more past other repair shops just to do business with you? You know, what would the impact be if you could make, you know, as a shop owner, really bold promises about, you know, customer service and satisfaction that none of your competitors either could make or would make? You know, what would that be like? What kind of competitive advantage would that give you?
That'd be strong.
It would. So what would your business look like if your customers put you in the same set as their favorite coffee shop or their barber or their hairstylist or maybe even a longtime trusted accountant? So what if your shop, you know, and this is directed to the listener, but what if your shop fit into that same category in terms of emotional connection and attachment with customers?
Yeah, and it really is a critical question. I mean, you know, we've got some ideas, right? But we're not necessarily here to answer that today. It's really not about us at this point, or even an agency you might be working with or a marketing partner, what have you. What it's really about when you start defining what does legendary service look like for you, you know your customers better than anybody else. You know
That's
your
right.
town, you know your customers, you know your location, you know your products, you know your people you work for you. You know all of that better than anybody. So when you start trying to craft what does legendary service look like, it is unique to you.
And what can you afford to do? You know, what can you do?
Another
There's a guy
point.
Here in Dallas, and most of the listeners will probably know the name Sewell. Carl Sewell wrote a book back in the 80s called Customers for Life. And he is and still is a legendary car dealer. And back when he wrote that, it was unheard of, you know, Customers for Life. Well, literally, Carl Sewell, even to this day, if you buy a Lexus from him or a Cadillac, he will send somebody, you know, 150 miles from his store to go pick up your car for an oil change. It's ridiculous. Now, he's done the numbers on that and recognizes that not many people actually take him up on that, so he can make that kind of promise, but still the talk value and the experiential value is legendary. In fact, it's the stuff of books. And of course, he wrote a best-selling book.
Absolutely. And he did two things. For starters, he crafted the experience. He got that part of it right, like we just talked about.
Absolutely. But
the second part he also did was, now once he got it right, he told the whole world about
it. That's exactly right. So I would also recommend to any of our listeners, if you're ever in Dallas, Texas, go by one of the Sewell dealerships and just talk to the guys about what they do. And you'll catch a big clue about how to offer legendary service.
That's
and,
right.
And I'm sure a lot of the listeners already do offer great, great service. But boy, there's always an opportunity to take it up a notch.
That's right. And once you do, once you make sure your product is absolutely right, now, like you said, it's time to tell the world about it. You know, advertising can only sell a product or service one time. We talked about that earlier.
That's right.
And great advertising is the most effective way to kill a bad product.
That's the irony here.
Right.
That is the absolute irony here. So if you've got a bad product or a bad service experience and you tell everybody to come in and experience you, and they come in and experience you, they're going to go out and tell everybody, geez, what a horrible experience this was, and don't come back. And so you're exactly right.
That's right.
And great advertising can kill a bad product or service faster than anything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, you set an expectation,
yep,
and then you fail to meet it, you're going to lose that customer forever. You got one shot.
Yep.
And
yep,
if you do it well, you got a long-time customer.
You got a lifetime customer.
Potentially for life.
Absolutely.
But if you mess it up that one time, they're gone. And don't forget, too, there's always word of mouth, and they're going to tell other people, and it spreads even more.
And that's a big point, too. So you have use the term here. We used to use the term without any qualification at all. But the truth is, you've got an opportunity to turn somebody into an evangelist for
that's
your
right
brand, or a terrorist for your brand.
That's
somebody
right
who's going to go out and absolutely do a lot of harm, against your reputation.
That's
so
right.
Let's shift and talk about the 12 things, and we'll start with number one here, but the 12 fundamental things that our listeners can do to build strong marketing programs for their own shops and their own services. And we'll start with the number one thing that we recommend and we actually do with every one of our advertising clients, and that is set measurable goals. If it's not written, it's not real, and if it's not measurable, it's not real either.
That's right.
It's just too darn easy to miss goals that aren't written down and are not attached to some meaningful metric. So we always begin with the end in mind by asking ourselves and our clients, what is it that they hope to achieve with their efforts? And so we want to tie the marketing efforts and the objectives back to specific business growth objectives. So, and we'll talk a little bit about what those business growth objectives might look like and how you might write those out. So how will your marketing plan help you achieve those growth goals? One industry source pegs annual compounded rate of growth for auto repair shops at around 6%. You know, between 2008, a year or so ago, all the way through 2013. So every year, this industry analyst is saying, hey, these shops should be growing at a rate of about 6%. So that figure should serve as a benchmark for operators who are actively marketing their shops. And our listeners, their goals should be written into their plan, and they should be pegged to at least 6% annualized growth.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, marketing goals, when you're hearing this and you may be saying to yourself, I don't even know where to start. I mean, trying to figure out marketing goals, we've been doing this, like you said, for a very long time. And even we have a tough time, sitting down, and it takes some time to really reason it through and think about it. Talk a little bit about what some of those goals might sound like to kind of give.
All right. Well, an example might be as written out. Okay, move up from fourth to third position in the carpet cleaning services market with an increase in share from 10% to 13.5%. I mean, that's actually a goal that we have written out for one of our carpet cleaning clients, Stanley Steamer International.
Right.
It could be, to regain the number one position in the roofing tiles market or what have you. But again, those things are measurable.
Right.
If you're number one or number two, right? When I worked on Volkswagen, we had a growth goal. Reach a specific level a Volkswagen Passat unit sold representing a 10% volume growth year over year, that kind of thing. So again, it needs to be very specifically stated and tied back to a unit growth goal or a sales revenue growth goal or something that you can actually measure.
Yeah, I think that's terrific. And so once you do that, once you kind of set your goals, the next step, step number two is really set a budget.
That's right.
It's
yeah.
like your home or your company or what have yep. you. You got to set a budget. You got to know what you want to spend.
It gives you a frame of reference. If you don't have a budget, every salesperson walking in, talking to you about why their radio station's number one or why this flyer is a great thing to be in, you write a check, and at the end of the year, you really don't have a good feeling for how much you spent on marketing. You've got to have a budget.
Exactly right. Or you kind of have an idea and everything sounds good, and by the end of April, The money's gone.
Right.
And then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Well, like we said, marketing is not really an expense. It's an investment.
Mm-hmm.
And you really need to set your budget with a return on investment in mind.
Yep.
Like Mike said in number one, everything's got to be measurable. And the way to do that is to help you figure out, what are you getting a return on your money for?
Well, and so let's explore it just a little bit more. So if I want a 6% annualized rate of growth, and say I've got $1 million in annual sales, so I want another $60,000 in revenue for my shop at the end of the year, what can I afford to spend to gain another $60,000? And again, a lot of the operators are going to have to answer that question for themselves, but it's obviously not 100%. You wouldn't spend $60,000 to get $60,000 unless you thought you could sustain and maintain that. And maybe it's worth something approaching that, although I highly doubt it.
The tough part is, you know, you invest too little and you won't make the necessary impact.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
But you invest too much and then you quickly exceed the point of diminishing returns. You wind up wasting, you know, valuable resources and the money that you do have.
That's right.
The most widely used method of setting an annual advertising budget is to use the advertising as a percentage of gross sales.
Right, right.
Or the advertising as a percentage of gross margin method. So
exactly.
So, you know, like you were saying, if you are selling X amount in sales, you know, earmark a certain percentage of that and then commit yourself to spending that in a smart, rational, you know.
Well, so let me be very, very specific about that for our listeners. So we've done the research, and for auto repair shops, the advertising to sales ratio is 3.8%. Okay, so what that means is that 3.8% of sales, gross sales, so if you have $1 million in annual sales, 3.8% of that is $38,000. That is, on average, what independent auto repair shops allocate for advertising, $38,000 on $1 million in sales.
For the year.
3.8% for the year. So you can round it and say 4%. So use 4%, and that's a fairly good retail number. Some retailers use considerably higher percentages, and others use smaller, but when you get much smaller, you're having really a nominal impact because it also depends on the market that you're in and how expensive that market is. But that market is. But if I were an independent auto repair shop, I would be looking at 4%, maybe 5% as a starting number. And if I had $1 million in annual sales, then my budget would be $40,000 or $50,000. And I would be using that to try and generate at least another $80,000 to $100,000 in incremental sales. So that would be, from that math, another 8% or 10% in growth.
Right. And it sounds like a lot of money, but frankly, depending on what market you're in, you can spend that money pretty quickly.
Right.
And so once you've kind of set the budget, you know, the next step, which is our number three, is all about writing a plan so you know how you're going to spend that
money. Let me take that one because that obviously is my background. So writing a plan, that's step number three. Actually commit this to writing. Write out what you're going to do on an annualized basis. It's time to sit down and commit your plan to writing. If it's not written and scheduled, it is not real. So the benefits of committing your plan to writing are really numerous and varied. It keeps you organized. It keeps you on track. It keeps you and your team accountable. But it also serves as the basis for what is truly, you know, we call it an iterative process. So it's the foundation for a process that can change and develop over time. So every time you execute a component of your plan, you're going to learn something about its effectiveness. And you don't want to just plug that into your memory because memories are fallible. I mean, you need to collect that information, record it so that it can inform your future planning efforts year over year. So every time, you know, that learning is captured and reflected in subsequent activities, you're getting better and more fine-tuned with respect to your own planning efforts. And so after a few years of, you know, formal marketing planning and execution, you'll have a plan that becomes highly refined and more effective. And so the next time you sit down for your annual planning, you'll have a really good fundamental understanding of what works and really what doesn't work as well.
Yeah, and one comment I want to add to that is if you look at these things that we just talked about, the 1, 2, 3, as kind of the building blocks of your plan and of solid marketing, they really are, you know, the goals, the budget, the plan, they really are the foundational building blocks for the program. And it sounds kind of elementary, but many business owners actually operate without these basics in place.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, imagine if you went to go build a house and you thought, yeah, this is going to be great and all this really cool stuff. And you just started building, you know, without the foundation, without the plumbing in place, without all those things, you know, you might end up with something that looks kind of cool, but at the end of it, there's no structure, there's no support.
It doesn't pass inspection.
Yeah, and it could crumble to the ground, you know. And the thing is, it takes a little bit of discipline.
Right.
It really does to embrace these three and say, yes, I'm going to do this, and then to actually stick to it. You know, without the three behind you, you know, you really don't have a marketing program. Instead, you just kind of have a bunch of disconnected activities that can really, really fly out of control and actually end up costing you a lot of money.
A lot, no doubt about it. Step number four, it's now time to kind of get a hand on your brand is what we call this. So this is really where the fun begins, because it's time to start thinking about, you know, what your company represents to consumers and how you want to show up in the marketplace, so to speak. You know, your brand lives inside a larger category that's attached to a much broader consumer perception about it. And in this case, their brands, their shops live in the auto repair shop category. So not to beat a dead horse, but let's go back, Michael, and kind of circle the wagon on that just a little bit and talk a little bit about what the implications are for creating a local brand inside that category.
Yeah, again, it seems a little fundamental, but first and foremost, you have to understand and embrace your category context. You got to know where you are and where you fit kind of on the food chain, you know, within your category. Your brand lives inside a larger category attached to a broader customer perception about it.
Mm-hmm.
The category you operate in has a lot to do with the way you need to think about your own brand's positioning. In essence, each category has a brand identity that serves as an overlay, if you will, for all the businesses that operate within that category. Think about amusement parks, for example. You know, the category overlay is fun, it's excitement, it's diversion, entertainment.
Yep.
If you were an amusement park owner, you'd obviously want to take customer perceptions of the category into account as you built your own brand. The challenge, and then we'd also argue the opportunity for auto repair shop owners, is that the category overlay or the customer perceptions of your category really isn't great. It's not favorable. It's not fun. It's not excitement.
Right.
It's not energy, right?
So, you know, I think that a report that we pulled from Roper sums it up probably better than anything else. And I'll go ahead and read this verbatim. I think it's really good for our listeners to kind of hear this. And the report says this. It says, because of the complexity of cars, consumers can't easily judge if a repair shop has treated them fairly. Polls consistently show that a high percentage of consumers believe that repair shops make unnecessary repairs, overcharge, or use inferior replacement parts. Press stories about repair shops engaged in unethical practices, including insurance fraud, are frequent. Yada, 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 yada. We all know that. So it's important just to recognize that, again, that we're working within that context. Okay, so let's set that aside now and start talking about creating a brand. And so what that might suggest, obviously, is that trust and credibility and fair treatment are really, really important in this category. Does that mean that we say the words trust and fair and credibility?
No,
we don't hit people over the heads with that because people have, you know, bigger radars than that. But you have to recognize that that is the elephant in the room. We've got to deal with that in a way that is effective, but isn't, but we're not pandering, if you will, to our customer prospects.
No. Well, those words have been used so often and so many times over the years that they are kind of hollow.
They're loaded.
They're a little empty.
Yep.
You know, people are a little cynical about it. And frankly, it goes back to the very first thing that we said, and that is it really all boils down to the experience people have with you. It's not what you say, it's how you respond, how you act with them.
Right. So just to make it absolutely clear, we're saying stay away from words like fair and trustworthy and credible
and
we're
honest.
The friendly guys and honest. Just stay away from the word. There's other ways to communicate that where people get the message and don't feel like the minute you say that, you're setting off alarm bells. And that is not the way to persuade or communicate in this category. Really not in any category, to be honest with you. So let's talk a little bit about creating brands. And we have an illustration, and of course, using through the medium of a podcast, we can't share the illustration. But in the illustration, if our listeners will just use their imaginations with me, we've got a picture of a dad, and he's standing in some water, you know, kind of on a beach, and he's throwing his little girl, who's probably 4 years old, up into the air. And the picture is a snapshot of the little girl with her arms and legs kind of spread out like Superman, and she's got a big smile on her face, and she's probably a foot above her dad, and her dad's got his arms outstretched. And we always stop and we say, okay, what is happening in this photo? And we'll get answers like, and we'll let the listeners think about this for a minute, but we'll get an answer like, well, you know, the dad's throwing his little girl up in the air, or, you know, they're having fun, you know, a nice day at the beach and that sort of thing. And what we talk a little bit about is the fact that, yep, the dad has done all those things and the dad is playing with the child, but what has the dad made implicit to the child?
Right, a promise.
A promise, right. So dad's throwing the little girl up in the air, and there's a promise implicit in that action. And the promise is that...
You better catch me.
Dad's going to catch me, okay? Now, what happens if dad doesn't catch me?
Well, you lose that trust.
You lose that trust. The trust is broken. So that's a nice metaphor for what a brand is, in our opinion. A brand is nothing more, nothing less than a promise made and a promise kept. So if you are making a promise like the dad is to his little girl and throwing the little girl up in the air and you break that promise, all trust is eroded. You cannot get it back. You're done. So that, in a very tangible, very real way, is your brand. When you catch that person, or you catch that little girl in this case, you've got a nice experience and you've perpetuated a great brand experience. So a brand is a promise made and a promise kept. That's our working definition.
That's right. So the challenge for you, you know, as you begin to think through your own brand, is to ask yourself two basic questions, kind of along the lines of this definition of a promise made and a promise kept. And that is, what is it like to do business with your shop?
Right.
And then what promises can you make and keep that your competition can't?
Yep.
And that leads us to step number five in our list, which is differentiating yourself in a relevant way.
Right.
And while you think about those two questions, you know, what's it like to do business with you, and what promises can you make and keep that your customers, your competitors can't, rather. You know, think about, how do you set yourself apart? You know, you need to be different, but not just for the sake of being different. I mean, you can't just say, well, you know, again, where language is pretty empty and hollow. We're different.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
If you were, I'd know it, or you'd show me.
Show me, don't tell me.
Right.
Yeah. And a great way to demonstrate that show me, don't tell me sort of analogy is, you know, in the recent problems with the auto companies and the economy and all that good stuff that everybody knows too much about by now, Hyundai did something really, really smart with respect to the show me, don't tell me. They came up with the Hyundai Assurance Program.
That's right. Right.
Where they told customers, and I think most of our listeners probably know this by now, but they told customers, look, if you lose your job, if you become unemployed for any reason, bring the car back.
And that's right. We'll take it back.
Exactly. And that's a big promise. That's a differentiating promise that really resonated at the time. And while all of the other car companies were losing share and losing sales, Hyundai actually increased sales by 16% in that really tumultuous, crazy environment. So again, when you find something that really resonates with customers and is different and breaks them old, there's a lot of power in that.
Absolutely.
And then let's shift over to step number six, halfway through our 12 fundamental steps here. Step number six is to develop your brand identity. And what we mean by this basically is to develop a real clear look, tone, and feel that you stick to. We mentioned earlier that advertising is an accumulating investment. It accumulates over time. If you're showing up looking differently every single time you run an ad, people have trouble putting that all together. Again, going back to the comment a while ago that we pay a whole lot more attention to our businesses than our customers do. You know, you always, in this case, you always want to be the guy who wears the same clothes and looks the same way so that people become familiar with you. You don't want to keep showing up and looking differently. And so what am I talking about most specifically? Font, you know, and print ads, layout. If you do radio, use the same voice.
Color schemes.
Yeah, color schemes. Be consistent over time. We call them, we develop very comprehensive style guides for our clients, and we don't violate those style guides. For our Dairy Queen client, for example, for Stanley Steamer International, for Papa John, some of those clients, the advertising always looks consistent. We're not there as advertisers trying to amuse ourselves by creating new and interesting things because we're bored with the look. We're trying to become familiar with our customers.
Yeah. Now more than ever, people are bombarded by these messages and so many thousands of messages every day. We've got to do everything we can to help them.
Right.
You know, we have to make it easy for them to remember who we are. And if we're constantly a moving target,
No one can keep up with that.
It's impossible.
Now, that doesn't mean don't be interesting, obviously. You got to be interesting and engaging. That's a different issue altogether.
But within the framework of your brand standards.
Of familiarity. Yeah, exactly.
And that brings us to step number 7, which is recognizing your lions.
Right.
You know, we've kind of made the assumption along that the listeners, you know, you guys understand the importance of properly defining who your target audience is, you know, demographically and geographically.
Yeah, it's true. And I think maybe we've already built in the assumption, and it's not always true, that everybody recognizes that not all customers are created equally. Your better customers need to be catered to. They need to be recognized somehow.
Absolutely. And that's who we're talking about when we say your lions. You know, there's definitely an important group of customers who bring you the lion's share of your business,
right?
Either directly or through referral, via word of mouth. You know, appropriately, like I said, we call this very important group lions. And most every business has a group of clients who represent really, you know, 20% of all their customers, but a disproportionately large percentage of their business.
Anywhere like 80%.
From 40 to as much as 80, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, you've all heard the 80-20 rule.
Right.
And
right.
It certainly applies here as well.
Yep. And I guarantee you, every one of our listeners gets this intuitively, but are they doing specific purposeful things to reward that really important customer population? That's the question.
Some way that lets you and your staff know when somebody walks through the door, this is a very important customer.
That's a great
point. Not
that
you wouldn't treat everybody great, but this person, give them a little extra love, because you know
banks do that. Banks know when you walk in, they know, it comes up on their system. Whoa, this guy's got a balance of, they don't want to lose those people. They do extra things. Oh, hello, Mr. So-and-so. You know, because your lions don't always self-identify.
That's right.
Just don't walk in and raise their hand and say, hey, I'm one of your best customers. And you're not always there to greet them.
That's right.
One of your team members is. One of your employees is. You want to make sure that they get the extra TLC they deserve.
Well, and you know what? It's smart to market to them differently.
It is.
It really is. It's okay, and it's really, really smart.
Yep.
You know, providing special programs and offers just for them. You don't necessarily have to do it in front of your other customers.
Right.
You don't want them to feel like you're not paying attention to them, but find ways to make your lions feel really, really important.
Well, you know, let's evaluate that a little bit too. There are several industries who have done just that. I don't know the last time you flew, but I sit there and wait for all the platinum golds, the diamonds, or whatever to get on long before I do, because I'm just an average flyer. I think today customers recognize that there are tiers based on who participates more and who brings more business. And so I wouldn't be overly sensitive to that. Certainly, though, you make a reasonable point not to throw it in somebody else's face, so to speak. But definitely the whole point is to make sure that you are singling out and marketing to your lines really effectively.
That's right. And if for no other reason, then your brand evangelists are going to come from this group.
No doubt.
These are the people that love you, would use you no matter what, and they're the ones that are telling a lot of other people about you.
That's true. And that brings us to step number 8, factor number 8, and that is think 360. Kind of a tongue twister there, think 360. And what we mean by that is that customers engage with your business and your brand on a number of different levels. It's really multifaceted. We call them consumer touch points in our business. And so your customers are literally surrounded by customer touch points. Everything from the advertising that you run to the interaction with the technician, everything communicates a message. The person answering the phone, the way the building looks, the way the parking lot looks, the way the shop looks, everything they can see, perceive, touch, smell, everything communicates about your brand. And so you really need to audit and understand each of those touch points and develop what we call intentional messaging strategies for your desired impact. And that's a real fancy way of saying just be really purposeful about the way you show up. You know, when you get dressed in the morning, if you're going to a nice outing, you're going to a wedding, you want to make sure your tie looks good, your cufflinks are good, your belt's on straight, all that good stuff. It's the same principle taken to another level. You're just applying it to your business.
You're kind of taking your brand standards idea and bringing it across your customer experience.
Yep.
You know, you want to be consistent also.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't do any good if, you know, you look good and everything is great, but their last thing they have is a bad conversation with a tech.
Yeah, or you have an attitude. Yeah.
Or the coffee's crummy.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You know what? You know, they throw their bill on the counter.
You
have to be consistent across the board
and
consistently excellent across the board.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. And it's a lot of hard work. You know, we have a bank client, just a great client. They've got a number of different branches in this region. They did a customer touch point audit and determined that there are 70 different opportunities for customers to engage with them, from the teller experience,
wow,
yeah, to the ATM experience, to the little receipt that comes out when they use their teller. There's an opportunity to communicate there. How clear is it? You know, the bank lobbies, the parking lot. I mean, 70 different opportunities. And I guarantee you, if our listeners walked through their experience from a customer's perspective, or invited a friend that they trust to do that with them, they would begin to see things that they never saw before. Interesting sort of analogy. We're looking for a new home right now. And the way I walk into a home and evaluate it really has opened my eyes with respect to the way I think people are walking into my home and evaluating it. Right. I hadn't really considered this or that. I had forgotten about this. And I think it's very true with entrepreneurs and business owners. They're so used to walking into their own establishment that they stop seeing certain things.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about that, that bank has 70 different customer touch points. It would be very easy to kind of intuitively rank those,
yeah,
and go, well, these 20 are important, the other 50,
not as much.
In the consumer's mind, all 70 are important, and
you never know
what's important to who. So
that's
why you got to show up consistently across
the
board.
So we'll put a button on that point. But what we would suggest is that our listeners start by diagnosing the way their customers come into contact with them and their business establishments, and then developing an appropriate approach for making each of those opportunities work for them. And so I think they'll find that the 360 approach costs no more than a little attention and effort. It's not a big expenditure.
That's right. And so let's look at number nine now. And this is a technique that we use, what we call overlay for insight. It's a very interesting way of looking at at businesses that we do. And earlier we addressed, to our listeners, your 170,000 competitors. We talked about them earlier. But it's useful to expand on the concept of competition for a second for the purposes of creating kind of a superb customer service offering and an equally effective marketing. The idea here is that your competition really isn't just other auto repair shops.
That's right.
It's every other retail company your customers do business with, because those are the standards.
That's kind of an aha moment for some folks. They're like, the experience that I'm getting at Starbucks.
Exactly.
If they can do it for me when I'm buying a $4 cup of coffee, well, why can't the guy down the street do it for me when I'm dropping $400 on my car? All of the other retail experiences combine to raise or lower, but generally raise customer expectations. We generally think in terms of our best customer experiences.
That's right. But if you look at it the right way, they also provide insight for opportunities to kind of distinguish your service offering from other auto repair shops.
Mm-hmm.
So take a look around at the other categories. Think about what kind of customer experiences you can create to set yourself apart from the competition in your category.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we get to the whole overlaying thing. Look at what other industries do well.
Right.
And then lay it on top of your industry, in case your shop, and see, how does that work?
Yeah, so like a good example might be, okay, well, what do the airlines do to boost customer loyalty?
Right, so they started the frequent flyer program.
A rewards program, right.
So what if you had a rewards program in your shop?
Again,
we talked about people are coming in for big ticket items, right? Well, what if every time you came for an oil change, for a tire rotation, for a new transmission, for whatever, you're building kind of credits?
Yeah, ties back to the Lions, too.
Absolutely.
Your best customers start to service. Okay, so what kinds of experiences are people having at Starbucks to make them so successful and willing to pay $4 for a cup of coffee?
Right. Well, think about it. At Starbucks, highly knowledgeable.
Right.
Highly friendly.
Very friendly.
And they've got, kind of a nice offering.
The ambiance is great too. There's a lot of different things that go on in that place, in that space. The lounge is nice. It's a place that they call it a third place. It's not home. It's not the office. It's a third place to go and relax. Now, auto repair shops aren't necessarily going to be the third place you go, to relax. But why not? Why not a great lobby? Why not a simple waiting area?
You can certainly have chairs that don't have ripped cushions. You can certainly have coffee that wasn't made 6 hours ago.
Exactly.
You can certainly have...
Attendant to those things.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even little snacks or crackers or what have you. Things that you can, make people feel like there's something a little extra.
Exactly. Another one. What do most insurance agents offer to reward people for, reward people who place all their business with them?
Right. They're discounts.
Yeah, the group discount, right?
For bundling. So let's say I bring my one car to you. That's great. But what if, I have three cars in my family?
Yeah.
What if I'm bringing all three to you?
Right. I'm a hoss. I'm potentially a lion again. And I'm also an influencer, because if I'm having both or all three of my cars worked on by you, I obviously really think a lot of you. So, and no doubt that our listeners know customers like that, and rewarding them and recognizing them, even if it's something as simple as, hey, here's a $10 Starbucks gift card, or here's a, you know, what have you, just to recognize them for their business is it goes a long way. It's showing appreciation.
Well, and think about how that success begets success. If I've got three cars and you're taking care of me, my word of mouth is going to be to other people who have three cars, four cars, because, hey, I got a discount or I got whatever because I have all three of my cars there. So now they're bringing not one car, but three.
And now I'm a smart shopper, which we know today is awfully important. And so finally, to kind of wrap this point up, I guess the question we would ask for overlaying for insight is, what club do people belong to when they do business with you? All right, think in terms of, you know, like Harley Davidson. What is it that makes them so loyal? What club do Harley Davidson riders belong to when they buy those bikes and ride those bikes? What club do your customers belong to?
Right. Why do people love Apple so much?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? Every product I have is an Apple.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the club here? Yeah.
Right. What defines that?
Exactly. And how do you fit? Step number 10, or factor number 10, is be big somewhere. And we talk a lot about this with respect to media planning and placement. And thinking back a little while ago, when we were talking about creating budgets, and we said, okay, if you got $1 million shop, your advertising budget on an annualized basis might be $40,000 or $50,000. Certainly, that's not an insignificant sum, but depending on the market you're in, you can spend that in a heartbeat. The whole be big somewhere concept is about concentrating your limited resources, because even the largest advertisers have limited and discrete defined resources, concentrating them for maximum impact. Don't spread yourself too thin. Find opportunities and outlets that work well for you. That goes back to planning and committing your plan to a writing so that you can become more intelligent about it over time. But find out what makes the biggest impact for you and feed that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So step number 11 is monitor the blogosphere.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a lot in some of our other podcasts, and you'll certainly hear a lot about social media and all that's going on now with that. One of our recommendations is to really monitor what's being said in social media and specifically the blogosphere.
Yeah, you
know,
have
be
to.
Sure you're staying on top of what people are saying about you online.
Yep.
You know, surprise and delight boisterous bashers. You know, these vocal minorities can turn out to be a huge brand advocate if you treat them the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, use sites like Yelp.com to help monitor what people are saying about
Yelp.com.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
And always, always respond professionally.
Yeah.
I know it feels good to kind of pop off and be defensive and answer them and whatever, especially online where it's somewhat anonymous.
Yep.
But it doesn't do any good,
no.
and it will never, ever resolve the problem. And it certainly won't turn, like Mike said earlier, the terrorist into evangelist.
Right,
and
exactly.
That's the goal here. The goal is to take these negative situations and then almost bend over backwards to make it right.
Right.
Because not only is the person you're helping seeing that, everybody in that
you get a lot of credit for it. Goes a long way.
Everybody online is seeing that too.
Yeah, they are opportunities veiled in challenges, no doubt about it.
That's right. And one thing to keep in mind, this is so hard for anybody who puts the time and the patience and the love and all and money and everything that you put into your business. Don't take feedback personally.
Right.
And never, never, like we said, argue or get defensive on the postings. You know, it's there for the world to see. So either attempt to win them back or just move on.
Yep.
But show up as a respectful expert and really help people out with advice and tips when you spot the opportunity. But do everything you can to kind of win people back. Because honestly, it's like they say, you do a lot more with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yeah.
And it really will help in the long run.
Yep, that's a good point. And it leads right into the 12th and final factor for building a strong marketing program. And that is to solicit customer feedback. Formally solicit customer feedback. You know, the only way to improve is to get feedback and respond appropriately, as Michael was just saying. So, you know, we often think that we know what our customers think and want, but the fact is that's just not often the case. There are a number of ways to solicit customer feedback, get people to talk to us directly or indirectly about what they like, don't like. You can ask your employees, your technicians, your frontline people. You can use comment cards. You can evaluate competitive offerings. And of course, you can talk to them. You've got to ask people the most important question of all, and that is, would you recommend us to a friend or colleague? Why or why not? the very most important question. You can do customer surveys in a formal way, and you know a lot of the listeners will have databases with email addresses. You don't want to spam people, obviously, but if you have an opt-in email address list, you can just solicit feedback for improving your services and incorporating that feedback into your offerings and your messages. If you don't have an opt-in email database, you can certainly make surveys available for your customers to fill out. Sometimes you have to incentivize them a little bit and tell them that, hey, you know, fill this out and we'll enter you in a drawing for a free oil change or a, you know, 10% off your next service or what have you. But you want that feedback. And more importantly, not only do you want the feedback, you're going to want to act on it.
Absolutely. You know, and it's not quite as widespread as a survey, but you can even invite some of your customers into your shop one night after hours or
Absolutely.
On a weekend, you know, get some pizza, get some sodas,
yep.
you know, give them maybe just, $10, $20 gift cards for their time and just ask them, just pick their brains about what do we do well and what can we do better?
Exactly. Hey, you know, at this point, obviously we've concluded all 12. Let's run back through the list of 12
That's a good
here.
Idea.
Yeah, just to refresh our listeners on what we've talked about here, and they can certainly back up and listen to it again. But number one, we said set measurable goals. Make sure that everything that you do has a metric behind it so that you can go back and evaluate your progress.
Yep.
Number two, set a budget. Make sure that you have got some parameters around what you're spending. You know what you're going to spend. You know how you're going to get there. And we talked a lot about the percentages that we used and how we assign budgets. Number three, write your plan. If it's not written, it's not real. And writing your plan builds in the added advantage that it becomes an iterative process. Big fancy word, but the fact is it gets better over time. Next year, you can use that plan to write an even better plan.
That's right. Those are the three fundamental things. Remember, you got to have the discipline to do that.
Right. Those are the fundamentals. Step number four, get a hand on your brand. Figure out who you are and how you want to show up. Step number five, leads from that, actually. Differentiate in a relevant way. Make your business, your company stand out in a way that is important to your customers and resonates with them. Number six, develop your brand identity. And that goes back to your style guide, the way you show up, the way you look, the way your tone is, the way you sound, that sort of thing. Number seven, we said recognize your lions, your best customers. Treat them differently. It's okay to treat people differently based on the way they behave in your shop, for sure. Step number eight, think 360. That's the consumer touch points. Everything communicates. Make sure that everything in your shop and in your experiences as delivered to customers communicates positively and intentionally. Step number nine, overlay for insight. And the technique of overlaying, as you recall, is borrowing ideas from other categories. We talked about the airlines, we talked about Starbucks and even Harley Davidson. What do those places do that you could do in your business to make your business more effective and interesting to your customers? Number 10, be big somewhere. And this is really a recommendation related to media spending. Concentrate your media spending on the most effective things, the most effective tactics and techniques that pull results in for you. So be big somewhere. Number 11, monitor the blogosphere. Make sure you're out there. Make sure you're soliciting feedback. Make sure that you are giving good feedback. Make sure you're an active participant. If it's not your thing, get somebody in your shop who's into that sort of thing. And then finally, as we just concluded with a minute ago, step number 12, solicit feedback in a formal way. Do surveys, poll your customers, engage with them.
That's right. And the one thing we really didn't talk a lot about, but that is kind of key to a marketing plan on a local level, is guerrilla marketing.
Absolutely.
We didn't really talk a lot about that. You know, guerrilla marketing is really kind of that unconventional way of doing things. It's supported with very little or no financial resources, but it kind of relies on, you know, the ability of having time, energy, imagination to kind of reach your consumers in kind of unexpected and unconventional ways.
At a local level. And that's really the subject for an entirely separate podcast.
Funny you should say that.
Yeah.
There's another podcast coming up
that
we're going to talk about that very thing and really give some really good examples about how these guys might be able to do that
the
on a local level.
Grassroots, local level stuff. All right. Well, thank you, Michael. This has been fun.
Yep, absolutely.
Hi, this is Bob Cooper again. I really do hope that you enjoyed what you just heard. As I mentioned earlier, these two guys not only have a track record of success, but they have a client list that includes Pier 1, Pepsi, Ford, Goodyear, a number of the auto part companies, and dealerships as well. There's no doubt about it. Mike Sullivan and Michael Tuggle are two of the most amazing marketeers on this entire planet. Now, if you're looking for more information on how you can bring in the right kind of customers and do it in the most affordable way, well, I have some really great news for you. All that you'll need to do is visit our website again. You'll find we have other downloads from Loomis, as well as a wealth of other marketing solutions that are going to be perfect for you. By the way, if you'd like to reach the good people at Loomis, well, that's easy too. All that you'll need to do is call 972-331-7000. That number again is 972-331-7000. On another note, if you're looking for help with sales, with recruiting, with employee management, or if you're just looking to build a more profitable, successful business, we can help you with all of those as well. To learn more about our industry-leading products and services in both English and Spanish, all that you'll need to do is visit our website at www.EliteWorldWideStore.com. This is Bob Cooper of Elite, and I would like to say from the bottom of my heart, thanks again for your trust in us.
This entire audio program, as well as all the associated materials, are protected under both U.S. and international law. It is illegal to copy this program, in whole or in part, to electronically transmit it to a third party, or to use it for any commercial purpose outside of its intended use without the expressed written permission of Elite Worldwide. To learn more about Elite and the terms and conditions of the use of this product, please visit our website at www.EliteWorldWideStore.com.